Mormon Stories Podcast is made possible through the financial contributions of its listeners. To keep it alive and available to future generations, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
Let's talk about that for a second. So I'll put a couple years ago, I felt really strongly about this issue. So I did a series of interviews, maybe five or six interviews with gay Mormons, tried to help a little bit with the Proposition 8 thing, started a website with some other friends called Mormons for Marriage. And you were supportive of that. I don't know if you remember, but you were supportive of that and I appreciated it.
I don't remember, but thanks.
So I thought like, well, now's the time, you know, people talk about homosexuality openly now. People are openly gay and they're somewhat embraced and welcomed. It's all over TV shows and movies and there's always the gay character. And, you know, it's like now health rights are often extended, health insurance rights within private companies. And now there's, you know, gay marriage that's allowed in several states. And so I was thinking, okay, well, now's the time to really start talking to LDS people about this. And I had several really progressive liberal LDS friends at the time, and I still do. And so I start putting out these interviews. And I was surprised at how many of these people who probably don't even believe the church is what it claims to be, who don't even view the church as the one true church, who don't necessarily even recognize the church's exclusive priesthood authority or whatever. But when I'd say, yeah, but there's this, you know, there was the blacks and now we've got the gays, and they would always kind of just pause, and they were a little uncomfortable because they didn't want to offend me, and they would say, you know, John, that's not my issue. That's one I'm not there yet. And I think that even among progressive Mormons, there's a huge percentage of them that just are not there yet. So I'm going to give you some of the arguments of a traditional believing religious person or Mormon, and just maybe have you provide a case for why some of these arguments aren't valid. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So number one argument, it's icky. It's just gross. It's disgusting. Not natural.
What's natural? First of all, to me, a lot of heterosexual acts are icky. A lot of them are icky. I mean, to see certain men and women together, just no, please. So icky can go both ways. And so what? You don't have to watch me. Take the sex out of this. This isn't about sex. You don't talk about, I'm not supposed to look at a husband and wife and just see them in bed. That's not what I'm supposed to see. So why is it that straight people can only see me if I'm somewhere with my boyfriend? All they can see is the two of us in bed. Why is that? Who's icky? Is it us or is it them projecting their icky on us? And is it normal? Well, you know, in almost every species of mammal, there are homosexual examples. Homosexuality is as normal as left-handed, as blue eyes, as blonde hair, it's just as normal. So, you know, it's a minority that somehow people don't want to understand. And for some reason, they find it not just offensive, but it makes them afraid. They're afraid of the gay society, and I don't know why. What are we going to do? Over-decorate their houses? I mean, get real. So I know both of the icky and the not normal. No, it's normal, and if it's icky, it's, you know, you're icky.
Okay, how about not natural? Just the body isn't made to do those types of things. It's just,
well,
it's unhealthy. It's unsanitary.
Well, so is going to the bathroom unsanitary. I mean, unless you, and again, it's just a personal thing. There are a lot of sexual acts that heterosexual couples do that don't create children. And you don't, sex and love are not a mechanical on and off switch. And I guess I'd have to say, you know, don't knock it till you've tried it. The whole thing about too many people, they can't even talk about homosexuality without zeroing in on the sex. And it's a whole lot more than that. It's really a love and a compassion and a sense of two people being in love and wanting to share their lives with each other, just as much as heterosexual people do. It's just the same. The only thing that's different is the sex act. And if that's all you're going to talk about, you know, then there's something wrong with you. That would be my response.
So, another really common argument against it is this perception of, which I know is offensive, the gay lifestyle. That being gay means being highly promiscuous, debauchery and orgies and bath parties and bathhouses. Just,
well, you know what promotes that? What promotes that is making it illegal, making it dirty, projecting that image on it. If society would turn around and embrace gay unions and embrace gay couples, then they would have some incentive to not be promiscuous, to not go out and have all these stupid things. And there's just as much promiscuity in heterosexual people as in homosexual people. Men are cheaters by and large on whichever side of the pond they're on. And orgies are orgies, just in heterosexual life as much as homosexual life. But this whole thing about gays are only, all gay people are promiscuous, bullshit. That's just not true. And the one thing that would stop it the most is to embrace our relationships, actually encourage them. All we do now, we fall in love and we have everybody trying to tear us apart. Everybody. Your parents, oh no, you don't really love him. Look at her. Your church, your government. Everybody wants to tear you apart. You don't get any tax incentives for being in a gay relationship. Oh no. So I think society makes us bad, and churches especially make us bad. They make us dirty, and then they get mad at us for being bad and being dirty.
What about the argument that if we accept gay people comfortably into our society, that they'll recruit and molest our sons?
Again, molestation and pedophilia are more rampant in heterosexuals than are in homosexuals, and I can give you many, many studies that prove that. And this argument, well, the other argument I've heard is that, well, you know, if we embrace homosexuality and we let it be legal, then everybody's going to be gay. No, they're not. I mean, you just said you're a heterosexual man, and the gay lifestyle is not something that's attractive to you. That's not going to attract people. If people are who they are, they're not going to suddenly turn one way or the other. I tried for years to be straight. Years. A straight man could try for years to be gay. He never will succeed. Never. So, I hate pedophilia. I think it's awful, no matter who does it to whom. But this idea that gay people are going to recruit children is so bizarre to me.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because you can't. You won't work. You can't talk anybody into being gay or straight.
What about through molesting them when they're a boy, you know? And I mean, you hear sometimes people say that molestation as a child screws you up.
It does.
And I know we've already talked about the fact that heterosexuals might molest people more than homosexuals. But I mean, let's just say if a boy gets molested when he's young, could that make him eventually screwed up in a way where he wouldn't have otherwise been? And maybe
I don't know of anyone. I don't know of one case like that. Could it happen? Probably. But again, this is just, if you just keep it hidden, it's never going to go away. If you just keep it hidden, you're just making it worse. If you keep it so, you know, people should have an honest, outlet for their sexual feelings. And if they don't, that leads to the bathroom sex and the pedophilia and all this other stuff. We are so, as a country, especially the United States, is so intent in making sex dirty and putting it in the, it's always at a toilet, you know, and sex can be a beautiful thing. It's a natural thing, whether it's homosexuality or heterosexuality. It just is. And if you keep it hidden and keep it squashed, it's going to come out in really ugly ways more and more, I believe. So again, I think accepting homosexuality and being able to talk about it intelligently and healthily is going to diminish these things, not increase them. A healthy, honest conversation is always better than this fearful, dirty talk that doesn't lead to anything good, ever.
Right. So the Bible speaks out against it.
No, it doesn't.
What do you mean?
Well, I have a movie I can give you for the Bible tells me so. There are interpretations. You could sell your daughter because the Bible tells you so. Tells you to do it. You could stone somebody to death because they have on a cloth of mixed threads. You could kill somebody because they don't keep the Sabbath day holy, in whose definition. So we could spend several hours discussing those Bible verses, but if anybody there's. Go get the movie for the Bible tells me so. I don't make any money on it, but go rent the movie for the Bible tells me so and watch it.
It's like one or two obscure verses in the Old Testament.
There's more than one or two. There's a few in the Old Testament. There's one in Peter, which Peter didn't write, by the way. Almost every biblical scholar will tell you Peter didn't write that. They're not sure who wrote it.
And Jesus never spoke about
Jesus
it.
Never said it. And
never
there's a lot of
it, never addressed
a lot,
it.
There are a lot of biblical historians that there's this story about the centurion, the Roman centurion, and he had a sick slave, and Jesus cured him because the centurion loved the slave. A lot of biblical scholars think that was a homosexual relationship between the centurion and the slave boy. And Jesus welcomed them in, blessed them, healed them.
And you said,
Jesus never said anything negative about homosexuality, not once.
Not once. And you'd think if it was this horrible, deathly abomination, he would have like at least mentioned it once.
You would have think if it was akin to murder, he would have said something, yeah. And there's some references about what Paul wrote, but actually what Paul was telling, Paul was actually chastising the Jews for not welcoming in the uncircumcised Gentiles into Christianity. And he basically was saying, you know, the homosexuals, basically he was saying, you know, you, the hom- he actually says you, the homosexuals are okay. Why don't you let Gentiles in? You're letting in the homosexual Jews. Why don't you let in the straight Gentiles? It's just a really different interpretation of things, and just you can prove anything or disprove anything by the Bible.
Yeah,
so that's really the
Do you remember what the Book of Mormon says about it?
The Book of Mormon doesn't say anything about it. Nothing except the same Old Testament verses that it quotes from Isaiah.
Right.
Those same. Other than that, the Book of Mormon says nothing. Neither does the Pearl of Great Price or the Doctrine and Covenants. Nothing. Not. And again, if it was such a big deal, Joseph Smith would have said something. I think.
Right. All right. So modern day revelation. Spencer B. Kimball, Bruce R. McConkie, they were clear about it. And so that trumps the scriptures.
Modern day revelation. Well, they also said some things about blacks that were changed. They said a lot of vile things about equality for women that were changed. You know, they developed the word of wisdom. And they, if you really want to look at historical facts of why they did the word of wisdom is because a lot, especially the drinking part, people were just getting too drunk. They were just overdoing it too much. And actually, if you look at the moderate, the word of wisdom is says all things in moderation. That's really the focus of it.
Right.
All things in moderation.
And then, of course, there's polygamy.
And then, of course, there's polygamy, which they still believe in. They still believe in, but they don't practice it in mortal life for political reasons, because they believe in obeying the laws of the land. Unless the laws of the land say it's okay to have gay marriage, and then they'll fight it to try to overturn it.
Right.
So why don't they try to put in a constitutional amendment to allow polygamy? They believe it. They still practice it in their temples.
Right. Right. Okay. Let's turn our conversation a bit to what it does to the life of a young Mormon gay man. Do you know anyone or have any stories about, walk us through what that experience can be like?
I know.
And the risks or the
damage. I know lots
of
young gay men who have been kicked out of their homes, out of their families, because they're gay. And their mother or their father or both think that, you know, if we kick them out, hard rule, they'll change and come back, won't be gay, and come back to home. It's a horrible, horrible thing that happens to those kids. Horrible. They can't go to homeless shelters because in Utah, if you're under 18, or is it under 21? If you're a minor, so maybe it's under 21, I don't know. Maybe it's under, I hope it's under 18. If you're male and a minor in Utah, the homeless shelters cannot let you stay there. So at dusk, they can go there in the day and but at when it's dusk, when it's nighttime, the law says the homeless shelter has to kick them out.
But the girls can stay.
I don't know. There's other provisions for the girls.
Okay.
But so if I were to go down to the homeless shelter at dusk and get these kids, these men, these boys, and say, come to my house for the night, I could get arrested and put in jail for harboring a minor. So, I mean, it's these poor kids that are turned out of their houses and hated. Youth suicide in Utah is rampant. It's the worst in the country. And a big percentage of those kids are gay, male and female. Simply because they feel like they have failed their family, they have failed their church, they can't be happy, they're going to go to hell anyway. It would have been better had they not been born, so they die.
I've heard that, I read in the Deseret News once that Utah leads the nation in suicides of young men between the ages of 18 and 25.
That's correct. That's correct. And a big percentage of them are gay.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because they feel like they have really failed. They have failed themselves. They have failed their families. They have failed their church. They don't have, they don't have anything to live for. And that's really sad. You have very talented, good kids killing themselves. I had suicidal thoughts. I was actually considered suicide. I'm just too much of a chicken to do it, I guess. Good thing. So let's just take my life out of all this equation. I think at least the life in Utah would be a little bit different had I never lived.
Right.
So how many others are we eliminating? like that. I think it's really sad. I think it's horrible, horrible. I mean, I'm grateful that the church has softened their stance. I really am honestly grateful. I'm happy that when, if I were to go into my stake president today and say the same thing, I would be advised to not get married. That's now stake church policy.
To no longer tell people like they told you to just get married.
They no longer tell, especially young men, but also girls, they no longer tell young people to get married and it will fix their homosexuality. They don't say that anymore. Good. I am very, very grateful that the church stood up and said that they support non-discrimination in the workplace and in housing. Thank you. That's only the civil, decent thing to do. I do not understand why Dallin Oaks and others continue to say that homosexuality is a threat to religious freedom. I don't understand that. I don't understand how letting gays get married. I mean, we want something. We want something that straight people have had for years and years and years. We want those same rights, those same privileges that's given to us in the Constitution. How does that take religious freedom away from anyone? We're not asking to be married in a temple. I mean,
what about those who argue that someday you'll advocate for that? You'll advocate taking away the church's tax-exempt status because they won't let you...
No, they should take the church's tax-exempt status away for meddling in Proposition 8. That's why they should take the tax-exempt status away. I don't know of one person. Maybe there are. There probably are some people who want to get married in the temple. Why? The church never has to embrace homosexuality as a Mormon ideal. I don't care. But let me go to the courthouse and have the 1,200 rights that are given to me in the constant that straight couples get that I can't get. Let me be able to marry the person I love and have him come to the United States legally. I guess I have a problem with American men. I've only actually dated one seriously. So, but I, you know, give me the rights, give me the legal rights. That's all I ask for.
Sure.
You never have to embrace me in the church. I know there'll be some holdouts that'll want that. I don't. The LGBT movement in general doesn't. We're not asking for churches to embrace us. We're asking for our government to accept us as equal under the law. That's all. And we're asking for churches and families to at least understand us and embrace us as human beings. That's all.
Is it hard to be in a country where you're not a full first-class citizen in some regards?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I have a home in London. I hope I can move there soon, very soon. This country is so far behind in humanitarian equality. It's really amazing. Gays can get married in Mexico City. They can get married in Portugal and in Spain, in all of Benelux, Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, in Scandinavia, in South Africa. South Africa has full gay marriage equality.
Canada.
So, did you see their societies falling apart? I don't see that happening. So, and I don't see their economies falling apart either. So I don't see family values. I know a lot of families in other parts of the world, especially Western Europe. I have a lot of friends. And their families are just as strong now as they were 10 years ago.
What about the fear that gay couples will want to adopt and raise children that some people have?
I think gay parents are very good parents. I think they should be allowed to have, adopt and have kids. There, every study that's been made shows that gay parents are just as good a parents as straight parents, and that their kids are just as happy and well-adjusted as kids that are raised by straight parents.
What about the prevalence of homosexuality in the children of gay couples?
Again, I don't know anybody. I know lots of kids who have gay parents. Really, and they're really wonderful kids. And they're very straight, the kids are. They just have two moms or two dads, and the kids are as straight as they can be. These kids need to be loved. That's all they need. They need to be loved. They need to be taken care of. They need to be put out of the nest as productive, happy, healthy young people, young adults. That's the goal of parenting, I hope, I think. And gay parents do that just as well as straight parents. And that they don't turn them gay, just like straight parents don't turn their kids straight if they're gay. It doesn't work like that.
But what about the argument that a child deserves a mother and a father?
Well, what are you going to do? Make it against the law for single parents to raise their kids? Everybody deserves $1 million too. I don't buy it. I mean, I think most kids, what they want is a happy, loving home. I think that's what they want, really, stable. They want stability and love in their life.
Can a gay couple be stable?
Yeah, I know lots of them who are.
Or are they just running around promiscuous and, open marriages and...
No. The gay couples I know who are raising kids are really good, devoted parents. They really are very good, devoted parents. And I don't see the rate of promiscuity in those families any more than good, straight Mormon families whose husbands cheat on their wives all the time. I don't know. I had straight men. I don't know why. Maybe because I was the evil one. But when I was at WordPerfect, I had straight men coming to me all the time. They needed somebody to talk to. They had cheated on their wives, and they needed somebody that they knew would understand. So I said, it's not really my deal. I mean, you can work here. I'm not going to fire you, but
yeah.
It's your life. You have to deal with it.
How was Prop 8 for you? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but...
Prop 8 was like a kick in the groin to me. I donated the first $1 million to the No campaign, but I did that as soon as I found out the church was getting involved. Nobody believed me. That was the thing. All the LGBT leaders in California and around the country, I called them and I said, we need to get really serious about it. They all said, oh no, it'll never pass. Not in California. Prop 8 will never pass. I said, no, you don't understand. The Mormon church is involved. They're like a political machine. You've really got to take this seriously. That's another movie I hope people will see.
Milk? Or the Prop 8?
Prop 8.
Okay.
It was a campaign waged using fear and lies. And the fear and lies, well, the lies promoted the fear, which promoted the hate, which promoted yes. And if you want to have a battle, if you want to have an intellectual discussion, let's do it based on true facts. Let's talk about real surveys, real people, real issues, not fear tactics, not this, oh, the storm is brewing. There's a storm in California. And we might have to teach our children that gay marriage is okay. So what? Gay marriage is okay. Get a grip. Some people are gay, period. That's just the fact of life. Some people are gay. The sooner we accept it and embrace it and learn how to deal with it and talk about it intelligently and honestly, the better off we're all going to be. Prop 8 was a campaign built on fear and lies and money promoting those fear and lies, which made it pass. It was an awful, awful day. I hope the church learned a lesson from it. I know they're much more careful now. They're channeling all their money to the National Organization for Marriage. So we'll see how that goes.
How do you see it playing out in the United States over time?
We'll get there. It's just a matter of time. We'll get there.
You think?
Yeah. We fought off the national, the federal constitution. We fought that off.
The Defense of Marriage Act?
Yes. No. Yeah. Defense of Marriage Act. I put in $1 million into that one too. People think I have a lot of money. I don't actually. If I did, I wouldn't be living here. But equality, 50 years ago, interracial couples couldn't get married in most states. And that was struck down by the Supreme Court. You had a federal court judge yesterday who was appointed by Nixon, a Republican, saying that Section 3 of the DOMA is unconstitutional. You have the Proposition 8 lawsuit that's working its way through the courts, which will eventually end up in the Supreme Court. I don't know if it's going to happen through the courts or through legislative battles around the country, but we'll get there. All that has to happen right now is kill off everybody who's over 50, and we're there.
Not that you're advocating that.
I'm over 50, so kill me too. But, and it's true, even in the leadership of the church, if by some catastrophic event, the eldest six of the 12 apostles died, and the younger six stayed, and they brought six more on, the church would overturn it very quickly, because there's everybody in the Council of 12 doesn't even agree about this.
In the Council of the 12?
Yep.
That's what you've heard?
That's what I know.
That's what you know?
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to talk more about that?
Okay. Nope.
Okay. So there's not unanimity in the quorum on this issue?
Nope. Now, maybe there's unanimity about the gay marriage issue, per se. I don't know that one for fact. But I know about homosexuality being a choice. I know they're not united on that. I know about the issue of treating gays and lesbians respectfully and stop trying to change them. I know they're not agreement on that. And I kind of think that the pendulum has to be swaying towards the other side now because of their statement about the Salt Lake City ordinance. I don't know. But I know that this issue is not of a unanimous consent in the Quorum of the Twelve.
Do you remember Elder Bruce Hafen's speech to Evergreen a little while ago where he talked about regretting that homosexuality had been removed from the DSM, the Psychiatric Diagnostic and Statistic Manual, as a mental illness? He was disappointed that it was declassified as not being a mental illness, wished that it could be put back in. And
well, it's not a mental illness, so how is it going to be put back in? He can wish whatever he wants.
What about those who would say, let us use federal dollars to fund research to see if we can... I mean, it's obviously maybe
why
not a fun...
Why are these people so intent on changing me? Why I don't like them. Being a Mormon is a choice. Why shouldn't I have the right to outlaw it? Why shouldn't I have them go to psychiatric treatment for why they believe these crazy things that Mormons believe? Let's fund that. I bet you I can deprogram you as a Mormon much faster than you can deprogram me as being gay. No, that's hideous. That's awful. Why don't we just do DNA change so make sure the babies aren't born gay? How many gay people of history do you want to rule out? How many? If you mean, you know, you start messing up their DNA, you're changing who that person's going to be. You want to change, you want to take away a lot of the great artists, the great musicians, some of the great leaders, some of the great military people, some of the great athletes that we've had throughout the ages. You want to take them away? Why? Because you have an icky thing about gays? No. Brother Hafen can go stick it. I'd love to meet somebody like that face to face. They won't talk to me face to face. I wish they would, actually. Maybe we could have a civil conversation. They just have to stay away from their idiotic things like that thing. I wish we could put homosexuality back into mental illness. Crazy.
What about, I mean, I think you acknowledge that it's not always fun to be gay, even in the 21st century in the U.S. What if science could figure out a way? Like,
I think it would be a really sad day for humanity. I really do.
Wouldn't it just be, things would be less complicated?
But you take away you take away a part of who that person is. I don't want to be straight anymore. I'm very happy I'm not straight. I would not be Bruce Bastion, who I am, if I were straight. I don't want to change who I am. What right do you have to change me? God didn't change me. If it's okay with God for me to be born this way, why do you have an issue with it?
No, I don't.
I don't know. I'm not. I'm just. Yeah, this no. is. My, I'm not saying you per se, John. I'm just saying. This is my argument to anyone.
Okay, let's say there's a 22-year-old male, just like LDS male, just like you were at some point, who like believes in God, believes in the church, has prayed and fasted and driven himself mad trying to ungay himself, and he hasn't worked. What if he wants there to be laboratories set up where they could do cutting edge psychological, hormone, whatever type of therapy, because he wants it?
Well, I guess that's his freedom. And if that's what somebody actually wanted out of his own free will and choice, I guess I would have to, you know, I believe people have a right to do whatever they feel is best for themselves. But I would like a chance to talk to that person.
What would you tell him? What would you tell him?
Just what I've told you. You know, I said, you change. If you change who you are, if you change this part of who you are, you change who you are. Just like if you change any part of your DNA structure, you change who you are. You change the molecular structure of your brain, and that's what you'd have to do. You'd have to somehow change the molecular structure of the brain. Or change the DNA of your whole sexual intimacy brain image. And I'm not a doctor or a scientist, but right. That's what you'd have to do. If you change that, you're going to change who you are. So, is that what you want? I mean, if that's what you want, okay. But I don't think this is my real problem with religious leaders. And it's not just Mormons, it's religious leaders and some politicians. They think that they are so wonderful or so intelligent that they have a right to go in and dictate. They know what's better for you. They know, John, we know what's best for you better than you do. How any Mormon can accept that, I don't know, because Mormons believe in the Holy Ghost. They believe in divine guidance to individuals. I believe that I have more right to divine guidance for myself than anyone else has for me. What I do in my life is my life. And nobody has a right to tell me. Nobody has a right to put himself on a throne above me and tell me what I should do and what I shouldn't do. No man is closer to God in my evolution than I am to myself. That's why I don't believe, I think those are horrible, horrible things to mankind. And I think they're wrong. I think they're humanitarianly wrong. Culturally wrong. Spiritually wrong. And I think they have to be made by, you know, what would it be? I have a simpler answer for that. For a 22-year-old that's a devout religious young man or girl who is having problem with this issue, wouldn't it be simpler and a lot cheaper to put your arm around them and say, we love you for who you are. Let's explore who you are and help you come to terms with who you are, why you have these feelings, and learn to love yourself for who you are. Wouldn't that be better? Instead of, let's fix me. I just don't believe in that at all. And I went through therapy and I had a wonderful, wonderful doctor. And that's basically what he did. He sat me down and helped me understand why it was okay to be Bruce. He was a Mormon. He had been a stake president. He was a wonderful, loving man. He changed my life. And he didn't change it by injecting me with something or giving me pills. He changed my life by simply helping me understand who I am and understanding that I'm not bad or icky for being who I am. And I think that's a lot more valuable, really. And I think people in the Mormon church have so much love. We grow up in the Mormon church learning about love, learning to love thy neighbor, love people, helping them out. People go through hardships, help them out, love them, welcome them in. That's all we're talking about, just on a different level.
Let's say there's the same young Mormon man, 22 years old, and he's listening to you and he's liking what you say, but then he says, I'm scared. I'm scared that my parents aren't going to love me. I'm scared that I'm going to lose the faith of my forefathers. My siblings are going to reject me. I'm never going to be able to be accepted as normal in society. I may get persecuted. I'm just scared. It's just easier to either A, just hide it and get married, or B, just live a life of solitude, of celibacy, and of devotion to the church. But Bruce, I'm too scared.
Well,
how would you encourage them to maybe see a brighter future than they might otherwise see for themselves?
The only way to overcome fear is to overcome fear. Just face it down and do it. I could have taken the easy way out and never done WordPerfect. It would have been a lot easier to go to work for Hewlett-Packard. Really, a lot more secure. I don't believe that the easy way out is necessarily, if ever, the right way out. I don't believe we're put on earth to take the easy way out. I think we're put on earth to do what's hard, do what's scary, learn the lessons we have to learn, and help other people do the same. I would encourage that young man or young woman to communicate and talk to people who do love them for who they are. And there are people who do. I was amazed when I came out how many of my family members wrapped me around, and it was scary. It wasn't easy, but I'd never undo that, ever. I wouldn't be sitting here with you had I done that.
What are the good things they potentially have to look forward to if they take that risk?
They'll be stronger people. They can face anybody in the face, face to face, and be proud of, you know, who they are, being proud of who they are. You can't live life for anyone else. You can't. You can't impose, you know, parents say, oh, you've disappointed me. Well, I'm sorry, mom and dad, but you know, you had your life. This one's mine. You can't live your life for your parents. And parents shouldn't expect their kids to live their lives for them. Not, and this isn't a gay issue. This is in general. You know, I want you to be a doctor or a scientist. Maybe I don't want to be. I just think there are so many blessings to come from being honest about who you are. There's so much strength from just being, from honesty and level, put it out there. You can grow, you can help people. I'm lucky though. I mean, I'm to a point where I don't fear anybody. I have fears. I'm not without fears. Don't get me wrong. But I don't fear anyone. They can kill me. They haven't beat me. But I'm different. Still different. Like I was when I was a kid. I think the world needs to be more accepting. I think we need to learn to embrace humanity, humankind. I don't think we're ever going to get through the mess we're in, many messes we're in, without thinking of each other and embracing each other. And the gay issue is so unimportant compared to other things we have to deal with in this world. I mean, we have an environment that we're destroying daily. And if we don't change, billions of people around the world are going to die. But we just kind of keep, no, we'd rather fight about gay marriage. It's silly.
What about the option for that young man of just saying, I'll commit to a life of celibacy for my God? I'll admit that I'm gay, but I'm gonna live God's law and live a celibate life as a sacrament to God, as an Abrahamic sacrifice.
If that's what makes him happy and he believes that that's what will make him happy, more power to him. I'm not going to try it. If somebody really believes, and I will say again, he has more right to divine direction for his own life than anyone else on earth. If he believes that that's what he needs to do for his own happiness, I support that. I embrace that. I would like a chance to talk to him. But at the end, because I just think he needs to understand the ramifications and the both sides. I'm afraid that too many kids, young people make decisions and they only hear one side. They only hear the bad, the scary part. They don't hear the wonderful stories, the beautiful stories that are out there. And there are a lot.
Yeah. And how do you think God feels about gays?
I don't think he cares at all.
You still believe in God?
Well, let's just say my belief in God is very, very different from what it was when I was 10 or 15 or 21. I believe in spirituality. I believe in karma. I believe in the divine nature of mankind. I'm not sure if I believe in a single supreme being or not anymore. I believe that we have, I do believe in spirituality. I do believe in life after death, but not like Mormons believe. I don't know. Am I God fearing? No. Am I karma fearing? Yes. If I do something bad to you, it'll come back. Sometime. If I do something good to you or for you, that'll come back too.
Well, let's end by talking about your philanthropic work. Okay. Tell us about your foundation.
The B.W. Bastian Foundation. We do a lot on GLBT issues. A lot. And we still do a lot with the arts, especially in Utah. It's a foundation. The executive director, the director of the foundation is Michael Marriott. And we have a board, so we function like a real foundation. And we don't have a lot of money to deal with, but we try to do things that we can to help things that we think will make a difference. And I think we're trying to focus more and more on that, actual things that will actually make a difference, either in a segment of society or in a large group of society, part of society. I'm trying to branch out. I would like to try to do more internationally. I think there are a lot of poor and suffering people in the world where $1,000 could really change somebody's life. And in the United States, $1,000 will hardly change an animal's life anymore. The foundation, just like I am evolving, the foundation is evolving. I've very involved in the human rights campaign. I'm on the board there. I've been for several years.
What's the human rights campaign?
The human rights campaign is the largest, LGBT advocacy group, in the United States. The largest LGBT political group fighting for equality for LGBT Americans. I've also just been appointed by President Obama to be on the Presidential Advisory Committee for the Arts, which is basically one of the committees over the Kennedy Center, which is kind of interesting that now I'm being put back into the arts and to music and opera, which I love. It's fascinating, exciting, and very, very rewarding. But the foundation is where all this started. The foundation is what was kind of the vehicle to made me start thinking, how can I change things? What can I do? And sometimes it's small amounts of money, and sometimes it's just hours of people's work that will change that. Just like what you're doing. There's no telling what just listening to what voice you have. You call it the Holy Ghost if you want. Just listen to that voice telling you, suggesting that you do this or that, and if you have the guts to do it.
Let's have you close, and I want to thank you so much for spending so much time and sharing so much of your personal and private story with us.
You're welcome.
Let's close by just, if you have some final thoughts on reflecting upon a life well lived and the truths or lessons that life has taught you, if you had to sort of sum up.
Well, I'm not dead yet. I know I'm different. I know I'm not like a lot of the other people. I'm finally okay with that. I think the strongest force in the universe is love. And I have learned to believe that the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is fear. Because fear promotes all bad things, in my opinion. Even when it's your own fear of yourself. And love promotes all good things, acceptance, forgiveness, good deeds, charity. And my favorite verses of Jesus are still the Sermon on the Mount. And I believe very strongly that if people really want to know what Jesus believed and stood for and taught, they should read the Sermon on the Mount. Everything else is, well, pretty much everything else is hearsay. It's what other people say about him. But these are supposedly his words. But yeah, I don't think, I'll reiterate what I said before. I don't think you can have a totally happy life by always taking the easy road. I think the greatest love you have to learn first is to love yourself. And accept yourself for who you are, good and bad. I think people should be treated decently, humanely, and equally. Even if we find some of the things they do icky. I have learned a lot in my life, and I know I still mess up. And if I didn't, I wouldn't have any need to be here anymore. But my biggest fear is fear. My biggest fear for humanity and my biggest fear for this country is fear. And the fear of turning things that we don't understand, turning minorities into something that we fear. They're going to, like, accepting them is going to make us less for some reason. We are so much stronger when we embrace each other. We are so much better, and we can accomplish so much more when we embrace each other and embrace each other's differences and come together and as one unit and go forward rather than picking off some small group and saying, no, we have to change them or we have to control them. There's no intrinsic evil with homosexuality. None. That's all perceived. It's all imagined and taught. I went to the wedding of my grandnephew 2 weeks ago in Massachusetts. So it was a legal gay wedding. And these are two guys that met each other several years ago at BYU. So it was a big gay Mormon wedding. And the interesting thing to me was the younger people had no problem with it. Even the kids, 10, 8, teenagers, they didn't have a problem with it. Even the Mormons, they have a problem with it. It's the older people, the parents. Oh, I'm so disappointed. This is so hard for me. Guess what? It's not your wedding. It's theirs. I just think if we would learn to just let people be who they are, and if they believe that this is what's going to make them happy, and it's not really going to hurt you, I mean, I don't want to say we embrace murderers and molesters and stuff like that. That's not what I'm advocating at all. But my being gay does not hurt anyone else. Maybe it hurts me, but that's my job. That's my business. It's my life. And I don't believe it does. I wouldn't be Bruce Bastion if I were not gay. So don't change me, please. And don't rebaptize me after I'm gone. Please.
Do you think the church is going to regret its actions someday?
Yeah.
Do you think it might even hurt?
I think it already has. I don't know for sure. But I know it's hurt a lot of families where there have been family members against other family members over this issue, which is sad. I think it has really turned a lot of people off. Non-Mormons have made them much less favorable in their feelings for the church. I know it has made some people come to the conclusion that they should distance themselves from the church. So I think anytime you do something that I believe is just not humanitarian or humanly good, I think it'll hurt you. The black issue hurt them. Polygamy hurt them, although I don't have a problem with polygamy, believe it or not. I really don't. If a man can find several women who want to share his life. If they want to do it, it's their business. I don't think, you know. But there are issues that hurt the church, and I think this is one of them. And they don't have, you know, they can protect who they are. They don't have to welcome gays into full membership into the church. They don't have to do that. They can say, you know, we still believe this is not according to God's plan. It is not according to Mormon doctrine. We still don't accept it as part of the Mormon faith. But if people decide that that's what the life they want to live, we will support them. We will love them. We acknowledge that they have every right to American freedoms and rights that any other American has. That's all, I think. And I think that would go a long way.
Bruce Bastian, thank you so much for joining us on Mormon Stories and sharing your thoughts and feelings.
I think I've gone on and on and on and on, but I'm happy to have my story out there. I really, you know, I have nothing against Mormons. My children are Mormons. A lot of my family are Mormons, and I love them dearly. And I accept that that's what they want. And I'm thankful that I hope I didn't come across that way today, but I do not take some of their arguments, and I will not take them lightly. But I'm glad I got to put it out there. So thank you for inviting me and being part of this.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to discuss it with others, please check us out online at mormonstories.org. If you want to find other friends, family members, former missionary companions, or ward members who approach Mormonism like you, consider adding me, John DeLynn, as your Facebook friend. This may seem like a strange idea, but many of my closest friends have discovered that they are not alone in their thoughts or feelings or family or even a ward situation through discovering mutual Facebook friends. Finally, to keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider a donation at mormonstories.org. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton.